woods and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Wild Michigan, I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes States. Hot this week, back to normal next week. But in the meantime, and we talked about this. We talked about what was going to happen with the weather, all the rain and cold we had when we jumped right from fall right into summer here in Michigan. What's been happening with deer and with wildlife and with water levels and everything else. If you've been seeing a lot more deer, a lot more fawns this year, it's because, according to Doug Roberts, the deer professor, in our last conversation we had, because of the water that was in places that normally wouldn't be, displacing the deer and everything else. So it's been a year, and it's been a good fawn watch year for me personally and my wife. We've been seeing a lot of deer this year. But we've been seeing a lot more even up close and personal, which gets kind of dangerous. So please be mindful of that when you're out driving around. But right now we're in drought conditions, and hopefully we won't see any issues with EHD coming up, as we have had in drought seasons past. I'm Duran Martinez, your host here on Wild Michigan, being brought to you by Not Just Guns. Remember, Wednesday nights is auction night at Not Just Guns. They're located in Mason on Cedar Street at 127. And right now is a great opportunity if you're looking for employment. Maybe you want to deal, be in the firearms business a little bit. Check out our friends at notjustguns.com. They're looking for some good qualified people to put to work, and they are busy. So make sure you check them out. Or if you just want to be a customer, make sure you walk on in. They are the good guys in the gun business. Believe me when I say that. Now, we're going to spend the hour, something that we normally do not do, but because we haven't caught up with them in a while, we haven't talked about a lot of the things going on in the outdoors with Drew Youngdyke. He is the Senior Communications Director for the National Wildlife Federation, and there are so many topics we wanted to cover. It just wasn't going to work in 20 minutes, so I wanted to get him on and take this opportunity to really get caught up. And summertime is one of those times, Drew, where people are just, you know what, everybody's out doing something. July, August, like the worst time in the world to be in the business I'm in outside of here, which is the retail sales business of antiques and collectibles and the like. I mean, this is like slow time for everybody, because Right. Everybody's out doing stuff. But there are people in the waters. They're out fishing. They're out doing this and that. And fishing, let's talk about that right now, the Asian carp issue. That's something that's not going away. And I wanted to get a little update as to what you're doing with the National Wildlife Federation, how their eyes are looking at this, and how Michigan as a state, how we are looking at it and doing something. Because as I've said many times before, Drew, nothing becomes of any level of importance until it becomes a crisis in this state.
Thank you, Duran, and thanks for having me back on again. Asian carp, there's been some big news happening over the last couple months, and what I think most people are probably aware of is that there's been this proposal for a Brandon Road plan south of Chicago, and that's this big project that's been proposed to rebuild a lock and dam that would provide a choke point to keep Asian carp from getting any closer to Lake Michigan. And that project has really been a couple years in the making, really from the beginning planning stages, almost 5 to 6 years, actually, from when they started. It's finally got to a point, though, where a couple months ago, the Army Corps of Engineers finalized the plan, approved it, and sent it to Congress. So the one thing we've been waiting for is just getting them to get it to Congress, and now it's in Congress's court, and they have to approve and fund this Brandon Road plan. Now, what this Brandon Road plan is, it basically creates a gauntlet to keep Asian carp from getting past it. It creates an engineered channel. It'll have an electric barrier, a bubble barrier, a sound barrier, and then a flushing lock if they make it through those first things that will flush all the invasive species that get through those first three barriers out. And what this project will do then is provide multiple levels of defense at the most likely point where Asian carp could get to the Great Lakes right now. And what we're talking about with that project is keeping out big head and silver carp. For those folks that don't know, if you've kind of been under a rock a little bit, is Asian carp, what they do is they eat the base of the food chain of waters they invade, starving out all of the forage fish above them, and then, of course, starving out all the sport fish that we like to target above them. So they could really wreak havoc on the Great Lakes $7 billion sport fishing industry if they get in. And that number is important to keep in mind because the estimate for this project is $780 million. So it's a big price tag, but when you consider that $7 billion sport fishery at risk, it's actually a very sound investment.
It is. You know, and the thing is, too, this should not I'm going to throw some personal opinion here, and I'm sure it's the opinion of many other sports-minded and non-sports-minded people alike. We should not have gotten to this stage. I mean, we brought them in as kind of like a cleaner fish for farms down south. We had some flooding, and they got into the river system. At what point in time, Drew, did they realize that you know, this might be a problem?
Well, it's been a problem in other parts of the country for decades now. They started getting loose and flooding down south in the 70s and just started slowly making their way forward. I think the Great Lakes states really got on board with understanding what was at risk here a little over a decade ago. And it was really when they first started finding the environmental DNA, which is basically they take little water samples. They can find they call it the eDNA of fish species and match it genetically and say, okay, this type of fish was in this water at some point. And they found that at the wrong end of those electric barriers separating the watersheds from Lake Michigan about 10 years ago. And that really kind of started this ball rolling. Since then, they've actually found a couple live Asian carp, a big head carp in 2010. And actually just two summers ago, they found a silver carp 9 miles from Lake Michigan. And actually this spring, they found that eDNA again 4 miles from Lake Michigan. So we know that at least a few of them are making it past the existing barriers, which tells us that those barriers aren't foolproof. There's a lot of a fishing down activity that's going on really throughout the Mississippi River Basin, especially in the upper Mississippi River Basin in Illinois and some parts of Indiana, where there's ongoing activities with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Illinois DNR, U.S. Geological Survey, to try to reduce their numbers before they get to that choke point that we're trying to keep them out of. And they're having a little bit of success there, but that's a temporary measure. That's not a long-term measure to keep funding those on and on and on. So we need to get these structural measures in place that can keep them out full-time. And this is really our one shot to get stronger structural measures in place to keep them out of the Great Lakes by Chicago.
Drew Youngdyke is our guest here. I'm Duran Martinez on Wild Michigan. Drew is the Senior Communications Director for the National Wildlife Federation and a longtime friend of the show here. Of course, you came from MUCC originally and then made the jump to the NWF. How's that transition been for you? Because, I mean, you've gone from the local, from the statewide scene to a national scene still being here in Michigan.
Yeah, actually, it's been great and actually a really natural fit because Michigan United Conservation Clubs is actually the Michigan affiliate for National Wildlife Federation. And so I still get to work with Michigan United Conservation Club staff, with Amy Trotter and actually Nick Green, the magazine editor and public information director that took my old role. I get to work with them all the time, which is great. And actually the same way that all the local rod and gun clubs set MUCC's policy at the statewide level, MUCC and all their counterparts across the country set our national policy for National Wildlife Federation. So the system is the same. It's just up on the federal level as far as most of the policy that we're dealing with versus the state level. So I work in issues with multiple states, but of course my heart's always here in Michigan.
All right, Drew Youngdyke is joining us here on Wild Michigan, being brought to you by Not Just Guns, notjustguns.com. Wednesday night is auction night. You like it, you buy it. You pay what you want to pay, and if you don't like it when you bought it, we'll work with you on that as well. It's Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Cross the line at an altitude time in a state.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, being brought to you by not just Guns in Mason, the good guys in the gun business, located on Cedar at 127. Check them out online, notjustguns.com. And we are back with Drew Youngdyke, the Senior Communications Director for the National Wildlife Federation. And Drew, this is like our semi-annual, you know, catch up with you. I really want to get the full details on these things that we talked about. We appreciate you talking about the Asian carp issue and the possibility, hopefully, that we can get together with everybody involved and say, you know, we need this new barrier. The Army Corps of Engineers has put it forth, and now it's being looked at. Hopefully, it won't get dissected too much, and we can just get going.
Right.
So, but now let's talk about the next topic, Recovering America's Wildlife Act, something relatively new that a lot of us may not know about.
Yeah, so the Recovering America's Wildlife Act is a big push, a big piece of legislation that was reintroduced just last week. And it's actually been introduced the last two terms, and it's gotten momentum and support and lots of co-sponsors, just hasn't made it over the edge yet. And so it's been reintroduced. Actually co-sponsored by Representative Debbie Dingell, who's actually my congresswoman. Also co-sponsors, one of the original co-sponsors, is Representative Fred Upton. So bipartisan support, over 60 co-sponsors from both parties. And what the Recovering America's Wildlife Act is all about is making sure that we're recovering the most at-risk species in America, and those are delineated in each state on each state's species of greatest conservation need list, which they develop as part of their wildlife action plans they have to make to get their Pittman-Robertson funding. And so we have already these lists. The states already have these action plans in place to recover these species. And generally what we're talking about are non-game species that aren't so critical that they're on the endangered species list, but they could be. And what this act tries to do is get the states the funding to implement those wildlife action plans so we can keep those species off the endangered species list. And that means that we also keep all those restrictive Endangered Species Act regulations from having to go into effect. And so what's happened is really since 1937 in the Pittman-Robertson Act, hunters and anglers have funded wildlife conservation, and we've done a great job of recovering especially game species. There's just been about a third of the species throughout the country have been kind of left behind and aren't doing as well. And really it's because you don't have, you know, a dedicated group like, you know, Ducks Unlimited or the National Wild Turkey Federation that says, okay, this is our species that we care about. We're doing all this extra stuff for. And so this would actually, while hunters and anglers have been funding conservation really for the last 80 plus years, this would get every citizen in America a little bit of skin in the game so that they're adding to the conservation funding for non-game species. It would complement, not replace, Pittman-Robertson funding and really provide the wildlife funding that state agencies need to implement these plans that they already have on the books, but generally don't have the funding to implement.
Drew, what do you think the percentage is of people that actually know, first, what the Pittman-Robertson is? Second of all, realize that buying that box of shells or whatever it is that they've been doing for all these years has been benefiting the game species in the country.
Well, you know, I'd like to think that most hunters do, but I don't even know if that's the case. So I'll provide a real quick primer on that. Actually, this was the first thing that the National Wildlife Federation did after we were founded in 1936, is we led the coalition that passed the Pittman-Robertson Act. And what this does is there was already an existing 11% excise tax on firearms and ammunition. That was already in existence. And in the 30s, in the Dust Bowl, wildlife populations were plummeting. You couldn't find a deer anywhere. It was like front page news if you saw a deer anywhere. And ducks were in bad shape. Turkeys were almost non-existent. And so what the National Wildlife Federation, working with other groups like Ducks Unlimited and actually some of the firearms manufacturers, as well as non-hunting groups like garden clubs and Audubon clubs, they all got together and passed the Pittman-Robertson Act to take that 11% excise tax and put it into a fund that gets divvied up and sent to states for wildlife conservation and restoration. And that's why we have all the game species that we have now that we get to hunt. And so that's been a tremendous success. Hunters, anglers, and anglers through the Dingell-Johnson Act passed in the 50s, that's similar on fishing equipment. But hunters, anglers, and recreational shooters have been funding conservation for 80 years. What this does is it takes some from general fund, from general tax. It's $1.3 billion total that gets divvied up to all the states, and that would help recover the other wildlife species that have been left behind.
Now, what are some of these species, I mean, the non-game species that we do care about? And, you know, again, let's not wait till something's a crisis, because we're so good at that as of my generation anyway.
Right, right. And, you know, some of these actually are game fish species with very limited take. So examples in Michigan actually are like the bald eagle. The bald eagle is off the endangered species list. It's recovered, but it also is a candidate that it could go back on if things go wrong. So let's make sure we recover that. Sturgeon in Michigan. Osprey is a recovered species. The Kirtland's warbler up in, north central Michigan, that's one that's about to come off the endangered species list and is going to need some dedicated conservation funding to make sure it keeps it off the list. And remember, when we have things on the endangered species list, that comes with a whole bunch of regulations on business, on industry, and what we can do timber harvest-wise, all that kind of stuff. So if we keep them off the list, we have a little more flexibility in how we can manage habitat. So those are some examples here in Michigan, at least. You know, even the brook trout in some waters is on that list for a lot of states. But each state has a full list of species of greatest conservation need. I think those are probably some of the more high-profile ones that we have here in Michigan.
See, and that's a lot of stuff. I mean, unless it makes the paper, a lot of people don't realize. I mean, the bald eagle has always been one of those touchy subjects. God bless it. It's our national bird, our symbol of freedom. And when somebody, you know, finds one that has been taken out by some unethical individual, believe me, it becomes a firestorm via social media, via the regular media, and everything else. But there's a lot of things, like you said, like the Kirtland's we've known about in the news over the years, the osprey and things of that nature. But they kind of have a tendency to kind of go away if it's not put in front of our face.
Right. And, you know, to be honest, you know, there are hundreds of species in every state that make that list. You know, I listed maybe like the four or five most well-recognized, but it's the full diversity of all the other species that you may not recognize so readily that actually builds the whole habitat and the whole system that all the species rely on, including game species.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, this is a way that, you know, for hunters and anglers to support this, what we're saying is, hey, we've been funding this whole thing the rest of the way. Now the rest of you can help pitch in a little bit. Michigan, I think, is estimated to get about $30 million a year from this, which is actually just slightly more than we get generally annually from the Pittman-Robertson. So we're talking about significant funding to almost double the federal allocation that the states get for wildlife conservation, which would be a huge boost to wildlife.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see the other groups that claim that lay claim to some of these properties that we use for hunting and fishing, to actually step up and pay their share as well. So, you know, then we're all on the same page.
Right, and speaking about on the same page, you know, we're proud that both National Wildlife Federation at the federal level and the Congressional Sportsmen's Foundation are fully in support of this and are kind of the two main lead groups on it.
All right, Drew Youngdike is joining us here. I'm Duran Martinez. We've got a whole lot more coming your way on Wild Michigan.
You can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan.
Turn the quiet up. Turn the noise down. Let this old world just spin around.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State, all over the world, via our website, wildmichiganradio.com. You can pick up the podcast, pick up our affiliates, wherever they may be. And if you'd like to become an affiliate, maybe you're listening up in the UP via podcast or via, you know, anywhere. I mean, there's so many places in podcasts that are carrying the show. it kind of blows my mind, but we appreciate each and every one of you for listening. But if you got a local affiliate, something on terrestrial radio that you think would be a good fit for us, by all means, contact me. My phone number and my email are on the website at wildmichiganradio.com. And thanks to Not Just Guns in Mason on Cedar Street at 127 for being a sponsor of this show. And we are talking with Drew Youngdyke. He is the Senior Communications Director for the National Wildlife Federation. Drew, we weren't going to get you on for an hour and not talk about this hot button issue, if you will, here in Michigan and many other states. We're not the first to have this issue. We're probably dealing with it a lot differently than others because we have two peninsulas in this state. But I'm talking about CWD, chronic wasting disease. And the first question I want to ask is something we brought up with many times on this show. Okay, we've identified the problem. We're still figuring out exactly pinpointing. I mean, we have so many different avenues that this could all happen, but we know what it is. We've identified what it does, but what are we doing to maybe not only stop, but to move forward with a cure if such a thing exists, because we know so little about the disease?
Yeah, well, you know, so far the science doesn't say that there is a cure for it. So what wildlife managers are trying to do is slow and prevent the spread of it to new areas, you know, before they can get a handle on it. And really, this is across multiple states. 30-plus states have chronic wasting disease in the wild deer herds. There's some federal legislation that I think will provide two of the most important gaps right now is understanding the science on how it's spread. We need a better understanding of that. So in order to prevent it from spreading, we need to understand the exact vectors through which it spread so we can reduce those vectors. And the other thing we need is actually funding. So you think about what Michigan has had to do since we first found this back in 2015, the significant testing that goes in, the funding that's required to do that, the surveillance, all of these actions that they've had to take have taken money out of, you know, what hunters and anglers put in to the Fish and Game Fund. And this is really strapping state agencies across the country. And so the CWD Management Act was introduced in both the House and Senate at the federal level, and that would provide $30 million to be sent out to states specifically for their CWD management actions like surveillance and testing, as well as another $10 to $25 million depending on, you know, the House or Senate version, which one they go with, that would be sent out for additional study and research on vectors, on how it's spread. Now, when we talk about vectors on how it's spread, I think this is where a lot of people get confused. When we talk about a vector and how it's spread, what they understand is that it's a prion disease. It can get spread through secretions, through saliva, through spinal tissue, that kind of thing. So that's why there's restrictions on transport of deer carcasses. And it's also why there's a very, you know, controversial approval of the bait ban to try to reduce one of those vectors through which it spread. Now, banning baiting when it comes to wildlife disease is fairly accepted practice amongst wildlife professionals. You look at the Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies model best management practices for preventing wildlife disease. That's one of them, because what baiting does is, you know, we're not talking about baiting as like an ethical hunting issue. That's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about is it's an additional additive pathway that disease can spread because it congregates wildlife. That doesn't mean that they don't congregate on their own already. It just means in addition to what they would already do under an apple tree or, you know, an oak tree or something like that, we're just adding to that another way that they would congregate even more. So when you get them congregated and swapping that saliva even more than they would already do naturally, what you do is you just speed up that transmission process. So by banning baiting, you're just taking away one of those avenues to slow down that rate of transmission.
Drew Youngdyke is our guest here on Wild Michigan. And, you know, they're very social animals. We understand that. We understand that they eat what's on the ground, they eat what's in the trees, and, you know, where their waste goes is where they eat, plain and simple. And they believe that's another vector for the carrying of the disease. But then again, we also understand the possibility of that going into the ground and coming back up through growth, through natural you know, natural forestation or whatever. So
right, and that's the thing that a lot of people don't realize about CWD is when it gets into the soil, it doesn't go away, but they don't fully understand yet exactly what the extent is of that, and that's where that additional study is needed.
You know, but I look at it. It's, you know, okay. The bait, the materials are not illegal. It's not illegal to sell in stores. It's not illegal to possess. It's illegal to use. You know, within you know the rules and guidelines of the state of Michigan and wherever else you're hunting. So there's really not. And mind you, Drew, this is not me encouraging use of these materials. I'm not using them as much as I believe in certain products. I'm not using them, but at the same time, it makes it very difficult to monitor and to enforce.
Yeah, and that's part of hunting. You know, hunting is part of each hunter out there taking individual responsibility for doing what's right. And if the law says, you know, if the regulations that say that we're not going to use bait, you know, it really becomes incumbent upon the individual hunter to have enough, I would say, integrity as a hunter out in the field not to use it. Even if you might personally disagree with the regulation, I always like to say, look, Michigan might have 600,000 hunters in Michigan. That means that we have 600,000 self-proclaimed biologists that know the exact one right way to manage deer. And we're never always going to agree with what the regulations are as far as like, okay, if it was just up to me, this is what I do. But we have to agree that when the regulations are set, we're going to abide by them. Mm-hmm. and do that. And so, you know, there are penalties if you get caught not doing the right thing. But why do that? Why trash the reputation of the hunting community doing that? Because what we're doing is if we allow this to spread faster, you know, if we take actions which allow CWD to spread to new areas faster than it would otherwise do before we can get some of these, you know, maybe that CWD funding research does find something that can prevent its spread. But if we've already got it in a new area that it's not going away from, and we could have prevented that, that's something that we're impacting those future generations of hunters that we're always talking about. You know, so as hunters, we're always talking about getting the next generation involved. We're always talking about passing down our outdoor heritage. Well, if we're going to, you know, violate the rules so that we can have a slightly easier time hunting this year and this season, and by doing that, we're risking the deer herd that our kids and grandkids are going to inherit, then we got to really look ourselves in the mirror and think about what we're doing as hunters.
Drew Young Dyke is our guest here. Let me play devil's advocate for a minute, which,
sure,
you know, I'm kind of pretty good at sometimes. The argument, I mean, you could possibly argue, even though I am not a biologist, I am not going to say that this is even rational thinking, but some of these products out there have minerals in them, you know, good, healthy minerals that not only help with antler growth, but with the overall herd of the deer, the physical being of the deer. Also, it's ingested by so many other animals out there. What's to say that we're not helping in the fight against? Again, this is just average guy throwing that out there.
Sure, and let's be clear too about some of the things that they're talking about. You know, there's restrictions on like the scent that can be used, but it's not a total ban. It's just saying that like for the scents that you put out there, it just has to be the ATA approved scent. And I know, for instance, like the one that you work with, there are
Conquest,
ATA approved.
Yeah. Okay, hang on a second.
They're ATA approved, but this other stuff, you know, we have to balance is a little bit of antler growth worth spreading CWD to a new area.
All right,
that balance, I'd say it is.
We're gonna talk more with Drew about this here coming up in the next segment here on Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
This is Cuz Strickland with Mossy Oak, and you're listening to Wild Michigan with Duran Martinez.
It sits above the mantle on a couple rusty nails, and it's worth a bunch of money, but it damn sure ain't for sale. The good Lord only knows all the stories it can tell. Granddaddy's gone.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. getting all caught up in that song. But anyway, getting caught up in the show as well was Drew Youngdyke, our guest, as we are being brought to you by Not Just Guns and Mason. Drew, we were talking briefly about playing devil's advocate, about saying, you know what, there's a lot of minerals, there's a lot of good stuff in these supplements that we're putting out for deer as an attractant. I mean, there are attractants in, let's say, and I'm just going to use this because they're friends, is Lucky Buck. You know, there's an apple scent in there, but there's a lot of good minerals, selenium for antler growth, plus all the other stuff that they have worked very hard at producing and putting together to ensure healthier deer. So, again, you know, the question, let's repose this question, you know, how do we know we're not helping? But then again, how do we know we're not hurting as well?
Yeah, and that's where adaptive management comes in. So, you know, when the DNR implements these regs, and it's approved by the Natural Resources Commission, what we call adaptive management, that's when we say, okay, we're just going to take the best available information, the best management practices that all the wildlife professionals across the country have come up with, and we're going to try how these work in our state. And we think that these are going to help reduce or slow the spread of CWD in our state. So when we talk about these other products, which can be great products, and I'm not saying that they're not, but what we have to balance is if they're banned under this because they might artificially congregate deer in a way that they wouldn't otherwise congregate, then what we have to balance is the benefits provided by that versus the risk of spreading CWD to another area faster. And it is a cost-benefit analysis, and if the Natural Resources Commission has determined that risk is too great to allow that congregation, it's just something we're going to have to do for the benefit of the resource first. So even though it might like grow antlers a little bit better, provide some of that, might have to replace some of that with habitat improvements and that kind of thing, but we really have to look at what's the most important thing. And what the DNR and NRC has determined is that the most important thing is slowing the growth of this disease. Now, maybe when they can get a handle on this disease, there's that additional study, that additional funding coming in so we can better understand its transmission, they can look back at these regulations in a couple of years and see if they're doing what they want them to do. And that's what adaptive management is. But at this point, it's got to be about stopping the disease first.
You know, and again, back to Lucky Buck, they're very good about knowing the regulations of each state and posting them on their website. We kind of applaud them. I had a conversation with one of the guys over there the other day asking how it's affecting their sales overall, not just in Michigan, but overall. And they're doing well, which I'm glad to hear, because they are a Michigan company. They are doing things the right way and you know, following the rules. So, and like we briefly mentioned about Doug and Karen Roberts at Conquest Scents, their scents are ATA approved. If you're looking for scents right out there, and it doesn't necessarily have to be Conquest. We prefer Conquest because they're friends, they're sponsors, they're a Michigan company, in that order. And, you know, make sure that whatever it is you're buying that uses natural product is ATA approved. Look for the sticker. It's very simple to find. That being said, let's leave the CWD thing behind. Let's talk about another issue that is going on, or something that is becoming more to the forefront, and that is lead shot. There's being a big push right now to move over to steel. Everything I hunt anymore is pretty much steel because I'm turkey hunting, waterfowling. If I pheasant hunt at all, it's a place like, you know, like Bear Creek, and they're steel. So, you know, there's really no huge change for me, but
yeah.
But there's, you know, going to be there are people that want to see things change a bit more with lead.
Well, and I'll tell you what, going from a topic like CWD to lead is actually one of my favorite things to do. And the reason is when the National Wildlife Federation talks about lead shot, we're talking about voluntary actions on the individual part of the hunter and angler. We're not pushing for regulations at the National Wildlife Federation. What we are doing is encouraging individual hunters and anglers to look at non-lead alternatives to hunting ammunition and fishing tackle on their own, and trying to educate hunters and anglers about, you know, the reasons why that might be a good idea and some of the options available. And so we have a new program called Lead Free Landscapes. We have a collaboration with Hunt to Eat with a pretty cool T-shirt where they donate some of the proceeds back to us to get this word out. This is a 100% educational campaign. We are not pushing for regulations. Although when you talk about that 1991 ban on lead for waterfowl, we actually were part of that. We sued the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to try to spur that because there were population-level impacts to waterfowl dying from lead poisoning. What we're not seeing now, we're not seeing necessarily population-level impacts on wildlife, so we're not pushing for regulations. We're just saying, as an individual hunter and angler, if you know that the lead shot you're using is going to land in an area that, you know, an eagle can come down and scavenge the gut pile, or, you know, it might be a lost jig head or a sinker that goes into a lake that a loon might eat and grind up in its gullet and get poisoned, those kind of things. Or if you're hunting upland birds and you know that, okay, you might wound one, not recover it, and an eagle or a hawk might come down and scavenge it and get lead poisoning from that, then you know that as an individual that the shot that you're shooting is going to last beyond what you're shooting at. And so when we go through hunter safety, what we always learn is that know what's where your target is and what's behind it. Be responsible for what your bullet or your shotgun shell does. And that's where we're approaching this. So if you know that I'm going to leave a gut pile in the woods and an eagle might come down and scavenge it, then that's something that's behind your target.
Mm-hmm.
And you're impacting that non-target wildlife with the lead, you know, bullet that you use with the fragments that are left in it. And so we're just saying, as an individual hunter and angler, look at maybe copper bullets. Look at steel shot. Look at tungsten. Right. Look at bismuth. Look at non-toxic lead sinkers and jigs. We're not going to try to regulate that. We're just saying, as an individual hunter and angler, give it a shot.
But I'm bummed. Sorry. You know, and I'll tell you, too, from a fiscal standpoint, I'm, you know, okay, look, I'm a radio guy. I'm not making a ton of money in this business. But every shot needs to count, whether you're being fiscally responsible or not. Steel shot is not cheap. Bismuth, definitely not cheap. So, you know, making that shot count becomes a little bit more economical as well. Again, just throwing that in there, but for the perspective of the impact on the wildlife after the fact, I understand that as well. And you know what? And I'm just going to say that I will do the best I can, but there are days that, you know, I can't afford the steel shot. I still got a bunch of this other stuff laying around. I'm going to use it, you know, sparingly, but I'm still going to use it.
Right. And when you consider all the other stuff that we spend money on as hunters and anglers, like there's a lot of stuff we spend money on that we don't need that we could put to something a little bit more important like that. But even so, we have to do a better job at getting more people to ask for it at the gun counter, getting more people to demand it, because we can't expect stores to stock the availability of non-lead alternatives for every different caliber and every different gauge out there if they're not hearing that demand from their customers. So I don't hold, you know, sometimes I have trouble for like my 7mm 08. I can't find copper ammunition for it. I might hunt with my 30-06 because that's the only one I can find copper bullets for.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't hold that against the stores. We need to do a better job, and that's what we're trying to do at the National Wildlife Federation, is just get more people asking for it, get more people considering it, doing it on their own. I think if we're able to do that, if we're able to raise the demand, if industry is able to meet that demand with an increased supply, we're going to see a lowering of costs as well.
Yeah, when the demand goes up, definitely. It's not like a vegan going into the meat counter saying, I want vegetables. Okay,
right.
This is not the issue here, and we want to make that clear. We're not telling stores to carry steel because, damn it, that's good for the environment and that's what I want. It's not that issue. I want to make that clear. We are suggesting alternatives, you know, and like I said, if I've got it and it's handy, I'm going to, or if I have enough forethought that I can go and I actually afford it at the time, I'm definitely going to do it. But I'm also going to be a little more, you know, aware of what I'm shooting with what I'm shooting and everything else. So it's a conscious decision that
you
can make or not.
And I think a lot of people have always been aware that spent lead shell might poison an eagle or might poison a loon or might, you know, poison a grouse or another upland bird or a pheasant that comes along, you know, and grinds up those spent lead shells. So, or even songbirds. So I don't think people really have given that much thought. And we're just trying to make sure that people are aware that that's a possibility and to act accordingly.
Well, you know, and, We will continue to suggest and make our make our points as we go, and not everybody's going to agree with it. That's fine. These are just suggestions. We want you just to,
right,
to have that pardon the pun, ammunition when you go to the store shopping. So
there we go.
Drew, it's been great, man. As always,
thank
I appreciate
you,
it. It's always fun, and it's even more fun when I get to play devil's advocate, when I get to play bad guy. So. But no bad guys in the outdoors, man. Only people make bad decisions. We appreciate you. Thanks for your work with the National Wildlife Federation. You want to check us out, wildmichiganradio.com. You can contact me if you'd like to sponsor the show or carry the show yourself. It's Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez on the Michigan Talk Network.